We have arrived. We have arrived.
Your samples phenomenal. Kirk Cousins had a good year.
Quavo gets cooking.
Get fucked.
From former athlete to now getting into the coaching circle, if you kind of just want to, for our listeners, kind of describe how you got on this path and how you ended up at University at Buffalo.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, if I was good enough to still be playing, I'd be playing. Right. So, you know, I took an unconventional path, but was a solid high school athlete, but knew I wanted to coach for a long time. So, you know, the only thing I try to tell people all the time is I just found something I was passionate about at an earlier age than most people. So I knew what I wanted to do. And I think if you're passionate about something, you should go for it and not really, you know, not give a shit what other people think, what other people like. You only got one life. Right. And I wanted to coach, and I liked being a part of team sports, and I liked being a part of something that was bigger than myself. And so I went to Miami of Ohio because it was considered the cradle of coaches, and got involved with a team that was not a very good program, but I knew it was a Division I school where I could get involved right away and do a little bit more than maybe going to a bigger school. Certainly was doing any and every job known to man. I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I was so green, it's ridiculous to look back on. But you know, worked on offense for 4 years and, you know, did every little task I possibly could. Met some great people, but learned a ton. And then the current head coach there, Chuck Martin, got hired going into my senior year. So certainly had a great time in college, met a ton of great friends, but had to sacrifice quite a bit for the job I was under. And, you know, people I went to college with had a tough time understanding at times, like, why are you wasting so much time with a program that's not very good? And I mean, I just think I learned how to balance it, not always the best way. Certainly found a way to get a finance degree, but that was a battle. You know, sometimes put football, you know, it's like I tell people all the time, you know, it's school first, football second, right? So that was what I was trying to do. And I got hired on as a graduate assistant after that. You know, long story short, moved over to defense, was with DBs for 2 years, got a master's degree somehow. And then got hired on at Michigan State in a role that I wasn't sure what it was going to be. But I went up there and interviewed and thought it was a GA job. Ended up being kind of a little different, but, you know, fell into the role that I went up there to interview for just by staying the course and not, you know, when I was your guys' age, you know, this is probably too much of a tangent, but like I used to always, you know, it says in the Bible, like comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so easy to compare yourself to people your age and like, why am I not getting this? Why am I not, like, when you think you're deserving of certain things, but if you just stay the course and outwork people and show up early, stay late and do the shit no one else wants to do and be a sponge and try to learn. Like, I always just chase growth. Like, could have left and been a Division II, Division III coach while going. Like, that's the path for some people. Like, this profession is so unique. There is no cookie cutter way of doing things, right? Like, everyone's got to where they are in a lot of different ways. In a very unconventional way. So I wanted to stay at the highest level for as long as I could and just learn from who I thought was the best. So did Michigan State for a year. We had a great year. The DC took me to Florida State with them, spent 3 years there, got to learn quite a bit in a lot of different ways and in a variety of roles, got fired, got retained, got to stay on with Coach Norvell's new staff. And, you know, I'm sitting there, whatever, 27, 28, I guess I was 28 at the time, about to turn 29. And, you know, you're going through life like, should I have taken this job? Should I have done this? You don't know, you know, for 5 years down the road if you took the right opportunities. But through one of the connections that I had made, got a cold call from the DC at South Carolina, and I was still young enough to GA. This is back – so analysts are now allowed to coach, okay? So analysts back then couldn't coach. Only graduate assistants could. So I didn't want to be that guy who didn't play at a high level and was stuck behind a computer, right? So I wanted to coach. I wanted to be on the field and show people that I could, like, not just make copies and, like, draw shit on Vizio. I wanted to coach and, like, be actively involved in the teaching aspect of the game. So I wanted to stay in GA roles. And so I went to South Carolina, Shane Beamer's first year, had a good year, won a bowl game, and finally get hired back by Chuck Martin, the same guy that gave me my first GA job. But at South Carolina is where I met Pete Lembo, who's now our head coach at the University of Buffalo. So went back to my alma mater for 2 years. We were obviously a lot better, won the MAC championship, coached some really good players, And, you know, I got into this thing because I wanted to make the largest impact on the most amount of people. And being a defensive coordinator takes that number from 14 to 15 linebackers to now, you know, 50 to 60 defensive players and managing, helping manage a defensive staff. And that to me is why you do it. Right. So long story short, I tried to make that as short as I could, but that's how we're here. Just finished up our first year, had a bowl game, 12 days ago. So now we're already on the road recruiting.
And that's the new age of college football. But thanks for kind of giving our listeners a little bit of a recap there and how you got to where you are now. Would love to just kind of ask, while you're on the recruiting trail, I feel like this is a good place to start. Like, how in this new college football environment are you finding to bring players to the non-power, like a non-power four program? Like, money seems to be king now. How are you navigating that? How are you finding, you start this call with finding the right players. How are you navigating that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously layers to it. I think that with the world of the portal, you know, what can get lost is there's obviously going to be better high school players available. So if you're willing to do the homework and build those relationships, you know, and even, you know, what some people aren't willing to do is you build these relationships and a guy, he might end up going to a P4 school, but then in 2 years you get him out of the portal. So, you know, you try to play the long game, man, and realize it is still about relationships at the end of the day and looking for the kids that are about the right stuff. I think the portal is like hopping on Hinge for you guys out there. I mean, it's speed dating, trying to find out as much as you can about somebody in a short amount of time because you want them to fit your organization, your culture, and what you're trying to do. But high school recruiting, you still have time, and you can take months and years to develop these relationships if you keep going back to the same high schools and same places. I just think you're looking for certain traits, but you're looking for guys that fit what you do. You know, we want guys that are competitive and love football because so much of, like you just said, it has turned into these transactional relationships. You know, what can you do for each other? But, you know, I'm still a firm believer in the transformational relationship and trying to, you know, make an impact in their lives. And I think there can be transactions and there can be NIL, and that's all great. Like, I'm all for everybody getting paid, but, you know, all these coaches want to sit here and complain about it, you know, especially at our level. And it's like, I always say complaining is like throwing up. It makes you feel better, but it makes everyone else around you feel like shit. So, you know, like, there's no, you either adapt or die. Like, you got one option. So let's just evolve and figure it out. And there's so many unknowns with roster fluidity, and, you know, they're going to vote on the roster going from 120 to 105. And, you know, what's that going to look like for P4 schools going from 85 scholarships to maybe 105, but with Title IX and women's sports? Like, there's a lot of layers here, man. So you just try to take it one day at a time. And if you try truly, in my opinion, to make every decision about the players and what's best for the players, then everything's going to take care of itself. You know, there's a lot of egos in this profession, just like anything else in any other, you know, profession that is very fast paced, but make the right decisions that are in the best interest of the players within your organization, because that's who you've been assigned and called to help, right?
Yeah, that, I feel like that building relationship aspect is something that's so unique to football. I played in high school, obviously didn't get to the next level, but like, that was something that's always stuck with me, just going back to coaches just reiterating that and you mentioning it too, and going to that next level. It's different now with all the different aspects like you had mentioned, but I feel like that's the common denominator of football. And if people are, I'm glad people aren't losing that, you know, like.
Yeah, no, I mean, not like, obviously you're going to run into the portal and tampering and money, but, you know, culture is a cliche word thrown around that every coach loves to talk about. But at the end of the day, like, what defines your culture? Okay. You know, we certainly are doing whatever we can to keep our best players, but, you know, other than Army, Navy, and Notre Dame, I believe that at Buffalo right now, we have the lowest number of kids in the portal than any Division I school in the country. So clearly, like, that's my pitch. It's like, come and talk to our players. They're obviously happy at Buffalo. So they love what we're doing. We just won 9 games for the second time in school history. So, like, you know, you can obviously get to where you want to go from anywhere, but it just depends on what you're looking for. And what I would say is, like, there's enough good players out there. You just got to find the right ones. And you're not going to get fired or lose your job because some other school beats you out on a player. you're going to get fired and lose your job because you took the wrong ones. And that's my viewpoint on it. And it just requires a lot more work. And, you know, it is what it is. But there's good enough players for you if you just do your homework and try to build those relationships and find them. And yeah, you're going to have a hard time holding on to them if you do your job and develop them. But, you know, you're going to be a small part in their journey, and you got to replace them. And coaches can leave too. So what's to say, like, you know, they can't leave? You know, I certainly wish the calendar was adjusted and it didn't like affect bowl games like it does. And it's just hard because the academic calendar for a lot of schools starts right now. Right. So, you know, if you're going to take your time to go visit other places, then you got to go do it in that time frame that is allotted to you. Right. So.
I think Chuck might be muted, unfortunately, but Joey, knowing you a little bit, you're gonna talk to me, I've heard fire come out a lot. I'd love for you to share what fire is with your listeners, as I think it's awesome. It's an easy thing to say. It gets me a little psyched. It gets me going.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna have to patent this. Okay, I'm not like, you know, this massive acronym guy, but I do think you need something to hang your hat on, right? That's defense is about how hard you play and getting off blocks and tackling people, and we make it a lot harder than it is, right? So we talk about playing with our hair on fire, right? And fire stands for focus, intent, response, and energy. And so it's really hard to keep 18 to 22-year-olds focused all the time. And do I take good notes in meetings? Do I sit up? Am I paying attention? Am I focused on play 60 to make the right check? Am I focused to hold the disguise because these quarterbacks have the green dot? And the coach-to-player communication, can I hold our disguise and hold our shell so that we can make the quarterback make post-snap decisions? Like, focus is so important. Can I focus on the sideline to make the proper adjustments? Intent, you know, I think this game is played with, you know, there's only one way to play this game, right? You got to play with violent intentions. You got to arrive at the ball carrier with violent intentions. And then I also think, you know, off the field, you have to be intentional with your relationships and how you treat people in the building and how you – you know, you got to take advantage of the resources you have as a Division I student athlete. And like, because there's people here that are trying to help you and going to be resources for you for the rest of your life. And obviously response is, you know, you it's so cliche, but you are defined by your response. And like, you're going to have a bad play. You're going to screw something up and you can't let it turn into a bad day. Right. You can't let one mistake in practice ruin a 2.5-hour practice. Right. So you got to respond, and that's life. That's why, to me, football is the greatest microcosm for life, because we all go through stuff. You don't know what somebody's going through, and we all have to be able to respond. And at some point, you got to still respond. You may have a bad day at work. You got to go home and be a good husband, be a good father, whatever that looks like, right? Like, response is for everybody. You've got to respond because there's so many emotions tied in with this game. And if you let your, you know, like, yeah, like, I mean, I get frustrated. I get mad. Like, I think that, you know, I'm far from perfect, but I do a good job of not letting things, you know, linger. Like, you got to be able to move on and respond. And then energy, like, you got to be able to come to the building every day with the same approach and have energy. Like, we only get so much time together. And if you're an energy vampire, then you're going to bring other people down around you, right? Nobody likes to go to work. People like to work with people that are enjoyable to be around. It's a very simple concept in life, right? Like, be an enjoyable human being to work with, have a smile on your face, and, you know, enjoy what we get to do, because it is fun. We're playing football. Have a sense of urgency, but enjoy what we do.
I like that, especially with it being something that you can assimilate to life. You know, everyone can learn from that and have that focus and that intent.
You got to tie it into life, man. You got to, right? You have to tie everything back, right?
You got football is life. I mean, for some of us on this, you know, breathing right. And talking to anyone who will listen to us, damn it. But
that's right. Hell yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of life lessons coming up in meetings and all of that throughout the year. But
yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I try to, you know, do my best as this soon to be 32-year-old to relate to these kids. It's getting harder and harder by the year, but I'm finding ways to, you know, if they know you care about them and you have their best interest, then I think that's what your job, you're assigned to do is you know, teach them about life and through your own experiences, right? We're all far from perfect, and we've made some mistakes, but, you know, you're trying to help them avoid some of those, but also learn, like, so many kids that are at those formative years, they have a tendency to see life through a straw and see what's right in front of them and not see through a scope and see the big picture. And you're just trying to give them perspective, man. That's all.
For sure.
Yeah. You had mentioned too about getting the DC job at Buffalo now. So what's it like calling plays
now? Oh man, it's the greatest adrenaline rush that is known to man. So I could have said a few other things there, but it's there's no better feeling. There is no better feeling. It's obviously, you know, players over plays, but it's super fun. It's super fun. And it's a collaborative effort. It's a collective. It's a defensive staff that comes together. It's the players making the plays. But it is certainly very fun to pull the trigger and do those things. You know, I have a blast doing it, and it certainly beats a nine to five behind a desk.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no need to rub it in, all right?
Hey, I just commended you for this podcast and everything you guys do. So, you know,
we try and have fun.
I've gassed you up enough, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Completely. Kind of on the note of defensive coordinating and calling plays, do you have anyone that you feel as a play caller on the defensive end that you've drawn inspiration from, whether it's drawing up blitzes, disguising coverages? Who's kind of your go-to guy in that arena?
Man, I think it constantly evolves, right? You're constantly trying to evolve what you do and how it, and take things from other people that fit what you do, right? You're not just going to wholesale change. But I go back to 2017 when Dave Aranda was super hot with the simulated four-man pressures in 2016. And we did a lot of that when I was at Michigan State. And obviously Dan Lanning got really hot, and Glenn Schumann and Kirby and everything that they've done. And I still watch them all the time. And the people I worked for, I mean, Clayton White at South Carolina did a great job this year. You're going to see two guys on Monday night, Al Golden and Jim Knowles, that are doing a tremendous job. There's so many good ones out there that I'm missing thousands, but I try to watch a bunch of NFL tape too. I think what Spags does in Kansas City with his pressures is exceptional. You know, D'Amico Ryans and what they did before he was in Houston, and now when he was with the Niners, and like Fred Warner and those overload fronts, like, I mean, you're always trying to evolve and adapt and find different things that fit you. But like, yes, I mean, nothing that I do did I make up on my own. Certainly you've adapted and made it your own and called it something. You can call it asparagus if you want. There's no, like, you can call it whatever you want. Like, you find, there's certainly trying to find better ways to teach things, right? We all play cover two. We all play quarters. We all play cover three. But like, how are you coaching it? What's the most efficient way to teach a flat technique or to a post player's eyes, or what do you have in the linebacker's key? And just like those things are what's exciting, right? I mean, you can draw up a million patterns, but it's always about players over plays, right? And regardless of you know, if you have Ohio State's level players or whatever it looks like you got to put your best players in positions to make plays, because you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? You got to put your best players in positions to make the plays and finish those plays. Otherwise you're going to, you know, you can't blitz a bad blitzer. Right? Everyone wants to pressure. Everyone wants to blitz, but if the kid can't blitz, like, you know, like, it's not probably not, you're playing with 10, right? So finding ways to be simple enough in your teaching, you know, cause you got to keep the ball inside and in front. And I'm a firm believer in that, and keeping it simple enough on first and second down, not to get too much into like scheme. But at the end of the day in college football, if you did not give up a play of 20 or more yards on a given series, the touchdown percentage is 7%. As soon as you give up a play of 20 or more yards, that percentage jumps to above 50 to 60%. So make people earn it. Make people drive the field. They will find a way to screw it up. You know, they get impatient. They're going to get a holding. They're going to get a false start. They're going to take a sack. Like, you're going to get your opportunities. And when you get your opportunities, you've got to capitalize. You've got to get off the field on third down. You got to be great situationally, and it's really hard to stay patient as a play caller because you want to get those TFLs. You want to get those, you know, those big havoc plays, but you've got to, you know, you just got to be calculated with it, right? It's calculated chaos, and you got to be able to call what your players can execute.
Yeah, yeah, coach, like I think. Yeah, coach, I think a perfect example kind of what you were just talking about there is Northern Illinois against our Irish this year. You know, and we're one game away from that being the only team to beat the possible national champion. But, you know, like you said, when you're if you put people in a position to make a play, you don't have to be a five-star playing at Ohio State or Notre Dame or Texas. And I think that was just a master performance by that Northern Illinois team where they were being put, their coaches were putting them offense and defense into positions to make the right plays every down of that game. And they held, you know, this team that's playing now in the last game of the season to two scores. So I think that's a great kind of analogy for the sport itself. It's like
I don't know if you watched NIU's next game because that was a masterclass too.
I was about to say you took that transitive, you know, the transitive property is king in college football, and you took them down the next week. But you know, just watching that game, it's like why are we not able to run the ball? Why are we not able to get push on the offensive line? And it's like their coaches were putting them in a position to be better, play in and play out. It didn't matter that the men on the other side of them were bigger and more highly recruited.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, it starts with a belief that you can do it, right? Like there has to be a belief, there has to be a buy-in, and you're still going to have to win some one-on-ones, right? You can put guys in position to make plays, but you're not going to dial up 80 blitzes in a game that you're going to have an unblocked rusher, right? Yeah. You need to win some one-on-ones, and you got to put those players in positions to get their one-on-ones. And you know, they got 11 guys and we got 11. It's not hockey. We don't get power plays, right? So like, you got 11, they got 11, and we have to find ways to win some one-on-ones and take away the matchups that are difficult that might push your team in a difficult situation. But, you know, it's a credit to those guys for just believing they could do it. And that was no fluke. Like, I mean, they played really well. They dominated the line of scrimmage. They did a really good job of capitalizing at the right times and you know, they kept it close. And the more you keep it close in those games, you know, the more pressure becomes on the favorite, right? So you keep it close. There's more belief. You got to start fast. You know, those games get out of hand so fast at times. Like, you got to start fast and build some momentum. And, you know, it's a combination of a lot of factors. But, you know, they did a hell of a job in that game.
Joe, you've harped a lot on growth throughout your conversation here. What would you say is something you're really trying to work on to get better at in your job? I know like a lot of things that you are, but kind of at the top of your list, what's something you're like, God, he's really good at this job. He's doing that well. That's something I need to get better.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're always trying to find ways to be more efficient, be more efficient in our daily workplace. Right. And first time being a coordinator and managing and leading a group of people, you know, and hadn't been around a lot of the coaches on our staff. So you want things done a certain way, but you know, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat and empowering your employees around you they're all hired to do a job and do it really well. So trusting the people around you and, you know, you spend so long as a GA or analyst, you're not used to having to delegate, you know, tasks to other people. And just trusting that, you know, those opinions and being more efficient. So delegation, efficiency, all those things. And also just finding better ways to coach things or better ways to, you know, put them in position to coach things simpler. And you have to have some tough conversations and you have to go through, you know, for lack of a better word, you got to go through the fire with people and you have to have tough conversations to be willing to adapt and remove your ego because I don't have all the answers. I don't have it all figured out. There's tons of better ways we can find to do things and coach things that make it simpler. A concept can be simpler for our players. So, you know, I'm trying to, you know, and you know, my grandpa, rest in peace, he used to always say anytime you take a new job, it takes 6 months to find the bathroom. Right. So, you know, going into year two, we should be way, way more efficient. We should be a well-oiled machine with how we plan practice, but you know, we had some success and success can breed complacency. Like, we have to act like we're a first year staff in a lot of regards and we haven't done anything, but But at the same time, you should be more efficient in knowing what works for our staff, what works for who's put your employees in the positions that their strengths can shine, right? And give them more opportunities to present to the defense or whatever that looks like, right? You know, in showing how we're even more so on the same page and how everything we do ties back into the overarching program message from our head coach, right? And supporting him.
Yeah, Coach, I had a question kind of about preparation. I think it's just so interesting with kind of how and like you mentioned also with the portal kind of making it even a crazier schedule in the postseason with the bowl schedule. But what's the difference in preparation look like when you say week three with Northern, you go into DeKalb to play the Huskies. You just watched them. You see them play the Irish. Great game by them. They're a team you know that's you're going to be playing, right? They're on your schedule. They're in your conference. But then end of the season, you guys have a great year, 8 wins. You get a chance for a bowl victory, and you get Liberty, non-con game. Probably a team you weren't able to see a ton that year. Like week to week, how different is it to try to prepare for a Liberty versus an NIU?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a totally different it's more like the first game of the year, right? You know, when you get in a weekly routine of the season, here's what a Sunday looks like, here's what a Monday looks like, here's what a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Like you get in that routine, that flow, and it flows very well, right? You know when you're going to recruit, when you're going to take your phone calls, when you're going to script practice. You know, when you're it's a bowl game and it's in the middle of the transfer portal and you're having visits, you know, it's much choppier. You got to get your work done when you have the time to get it done and you don't have kids on campus visiting. But at the same time, you certainly have a lot more time to prepare based on when our bowl game happens. Some people had earlier bowl games. So you got, like, I always try to keep in the back of our mind, like, this is like the first game of the season. We haven't played in over a month. So what's going to be the things that show up? Undisciplined play and lack of tackling. You know, you'd see teams all across the country that can't tackle week one at all. I mean, they just look like they're flopping around, diving off the diving board like it's swim class. So, like, we got to tackle. We got to work on tackling consistently, but we also got to get our players healthy. But the game plan itself is so much different. You have way too much time to overthink shit, you know, and start, what if they do this? What if they do that? And you're certainly watching the whole season and you're watching things from – a couple of years ago, just like creating shit in your head. And you're like, at the end of the day, like, we need to obviously take away what they do really well and stop that first. Because sometimes you don't know who's playing for them or who's playing for you. Guys might be going in the portal. So you got to keep it simple enough, but you also want to be able to have enough changeups to what they've been practicing for a month too. You know, it's great for younger players because it was like, we got a glorified spring ball. I mean, we got our young guys, tons of reps. We had 13 practices, you know, 12 with the walkthrough. So that's like a glorified spring ball for the development of our young guys in the program. But, you know, it's just a much choppier schedule when you have recruits on campus and you just got to be on all the time, but you got to flip your brain from a, you know, roster management recruiting standpoint to a, you know, it's time to game plan and focus on practice and coaching our guys. And you got to keep them locked in, but you also can't just grind them, can't be a meat grinder for a month straight, right? I mean, you got to like give them their time off. They got finals. They got, you know, there's a lot going on. So I just tried to, you know, we tried to focus on like when it's time to do football, it's time to do football. And same thing with going to the Bahamas. Like when it's time to have fun, they should have fun. They should enjoy the bowl trip. But it's like trying to teach them how to be a professional. When it's time to work, it's got 2 hours of football a day. Let's work. You know, when it's time to screw around and have a good time and enjoy it, like do that. You know, like there, you can have a balance and you don't have to like meat grind them for a month straight. Like you gotta kind of tone it back and make it fun. You can't just watch Liberty tape for a month straight. So we did a lot of self-scout. You know, it's hard enough to keep their attention span. You got to mix it up, you know, do different stuff in your meeting rooms. You know, so we did a lot of self-scout. We did a lot of working on stuff that has hurt us throughout the year. So it ended up being a great situation for the development of our guys.
Yeah, you guys played a great game too.
Yeah, that was a fun one, man. It was a fun one.
It was. What kind of impact would you say guys like Sean Dolak Solomon Brown, some of your other seniors, guys who have really played a ton of football, had on the defensive room throughout this year. How much did you kind of learn from them in this new role as a coordinator for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to rely on those guys. And Sean is an eraser, man. I mean, he's just like a big eraser, you know, like you screw something up on a paper and he's going to make it right. You know, he not only lead the country in tackles, he led the country with the lowest missed tackle percentage. So if he gets his paws on you, you're going down. You know, like he didn't miss tackles. It's fun to coach guys that are that experienced, but they want to get better and they want to be coached hard. Like he wanted to be coached hard. So you got to coach your best players hard. You know, like I heard Mike Tomlin say one time, you know, any coach can get a backup to go in there on a week of preparation and play his best game when he gets his opportunity. And I don't know if that's always the case, but in the NFL, like you got good players and a backup DB can go in there and execute. But the hardest challenge as a coach is to get your best players to be at their best all the time. Like that is hard. And to consistently show up and make those plays. And, you know, we grew a lot. Our relationship grew a lot. We certainly had, you know, he's really, really smart and he can process information. And he was the guy that wore the green dot and that I'm talking to on every play. And, you know, I gave him the keys to the ignition and let him make every check. You know, there's a lot of freedom with that guy. I let him get us in the right call with what he sees. And, you know, he's got to go make the plays. I can't make him. So if I can make him, like I said, I wouldn't be talking to you guys. You know, like, I mean, he's got to go make all the plays. So if he sees something that we've worked on throughout the week, he's got to trust, you know, that he can make the right check and communicate and take charge. So having those guys in the locker room and having guys that, you know, when things aren't perfect, that are going to be the same guy every day and show up and, you know, those are just that's why you do it, man. Like you don't want to let those guys down. You want to show up to the building every day to give those guys your best because they're pouring so much into this shit, man. And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Set it all there.
And like not to go on a tangent, but like the way they practice, you know, like he practices the right way every day and getting young guys to understand, like, even though Sean Dolak played 800 plus close to 900 snaps this season, like never came off the field one time. Okay. Like I had to load management him every week in practice. But like, you know, that was part of our relationship. He would get pissed. Like he wanted to practice, but it's like, you gotta be smart with those guys. But at the same time, like when they do practice, they practice the right way. And they set the example for what it's like to practice the right way and finish. Like, we're not going to go live, but can I put my body in the right position to finish a tackle? And there's body mechanics that are involved there. Like, put my body in position that I would have finished this play if it was a live setting.
And obviously statistics back that up in bringing that intensity every day to practice, doing the right things right, having it translate over to the game.
For sure. For sure. I mean, it's, you know, it does translate over to the game. Everything that you do, like, it's unbelievable. I mean, we don't, like, let me just tell you this. Like, we're not these guys that hop on Twitter and just post drills to look cool. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of Twitter gurus out there that just post a bunch of shit. And it's like not throwing shade at anybody. But it's like every drill we do, like we tell our players, like every drill we do, we got tangible game examples of why we do it and how it shows up in the game. Like, we're not here to waste anybody's time. Like, if we're doing, and we're very calculated, and that's why we spend so much damn time. Were we perfect? No. But, like, we're trying to make these drills and these walkthroughs replicate game-like situations so that you can go out there and execute when it shows up in the game. And I think you get more credibility as a coach when, like, you can show how this shows up, you know, from the peewees, from Pop Warner to the NFL. You show NFL examples of how this technique applies. And, you know, like, we know this from growing up in the generation that you grew up in. Like, you have access to so much information. Like, these kids want to know the why behind things. Like, they want to understand why we do what we do, how we do it. And if they do, they're going to execute a lot better. You can't just memorize, like, this is why we play this technique. Like, you got to understand why and what we're trying to take away and what the weaknesses are. And, like, there's just, like, it's chess, not checkers. Like, you have to spend – that's what the offseason's for, is, like, trying to really break it down and show them why we do what we do and how we do it. And here's what offenses do universally, because all these offensive coordinators do the same shit. They're all frauds. They all steal from each other. And, you know, there's certain universals that every offense carries. And if we don't know those, the bare minimum, then, like, we can't, You can't even learn, not even allowed as a new player to learn our defense until you learn how we call formations and how we identify like offensive universals, you know? And so like, that's a part of the off season, you know, offensive school that we do. So, yeah, sorry for that tangent, but I get excited talking about this stuff.
Yeah, it's always good to hear the X's and O's too about everything there. Yeah, because practices, it's a grind for football too. So it is, the fact that you know you're actually getting something out of it is huge. You need to. And it shows up, like you said, in the game. You guys had a great year. So you're doing something right.
Oh, and we have to find ways to improve. But like, you know, that's one thing I think people outside of coaching don't realize is like the amount of planning and preparation that goes into a practice. You know, like, the amount of planning that goes into like what the first period of practice is going to look like, or what situations we're going to work that day, or like, you know, your rep count, who's going to take these reps and who's going to get these reps, and the scripting of the play calls to make sure when I install something in fall camp, we're getting, you know, we're balancing the offense. Like, they're going to put in new stuff and they got to work on it. So we got to give them some base looks, but like, we also need to get this call repped versus some of the toughest looks and make it hard in practice. And, you know, that's how we are with our scout team. Like, we try to rep the hardest things that they could possibly see. So it's very, you know, I talk about it all the time. Like, we got to activate their brains. We try to really activate their brains during the course of the week and fluster them and make it difficult on them. So they want to come up and get extra work, you know, and they want to get it right. So I think there's a method to all of it, and it's never perfect, but you're trying to find ways to make it better. But how you practice and the way that you practice is going to show up. Like, the habits that you create are going to show up in critical moments. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously we've all individually mentioned, you know, none of us played at a level that you're coaching at right now. But I made my coaching debut last year, coaching an eighth grade baseball team, and seeing it from the flip side, as a coach, when you see someone on your team make a play and that play was made because of a drill that you put in and saw that they actually put the time in and knew the why behind, that was such a great feeling. Is you see that they made a difference in their play and you can kind of chalk that up to a drill you did. And, you know, going back further as a player, you know, it stunk when you were doing a drill or you were doing something that was hard at practice and you couldn't understand, or it didn't seem relevant. It didn't seem like something that was really going to help you out. You know, you might have dogged it a little bit, but as soon as you were able to see, or, you know, whether that needs to be explained or you can just see it based on how maybe a leader on the team is doing it, that's when you buy in and that's when you start drilling. Because when, as a player, I think it's a similar feeling when you make a play that you might not have made, and you know, it's because of reps you got in that week, then you buy into the practice even more. And then you trust the coaching. So I think
there's no better feeling. For sure. There is no better feeling. And conversely, when, like, you know, a player's not running to the ball in practice, or he's eating popcorn at the movie theater, and like, you know, we miss a tackle and he's not there to make the play, you got to show him the good, bad, the ugly. Like, every Sunday we show him the good, the bad, the ugly. What was good, what was bad, what was ugly. And like, you know, when you have leaders in your team, like, you know, the linebacker next to Sean Red Murdoch, okay, he led the country in forced fumbles this year. Like, when we do take, we don't call them turnovers. Like, I like calling them takeaways, because, you know, you create your own luck in life. When we do a takeaway circuit and like that dude tries to get the ball out, like with the intent that he practices with, like, you can show the entire defense. So it makes my job so easy, because you have a player like that who, like, he led the country in forced fumbles because the way that he chose to practice. Like, he's not fun to go against in that drill. He's going to try and punch at it, rake at it, strip at it. And every tackle he makes, he is trying with intent to go for the football. And that's why he led the country in forced fumbles. And that's why next year he's going to pass Khalil Mack's record of forced fumbles. Because if he's around you in traffic, he is – like, it's unbelievable how that kid tries to go for the football on every given play, you know, and he practices that way. And that has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the way that he's chosen to practice. And that just makes my job easier to show the defense, like, okay, you might go your whole 4 years here and never force a fumble because you practice with a lack of intent, you know. So that's all you got to say, you know, like, watch your rep and watch his rep. and tell me, like, are you practicing the right way? Are you, or is that going to show up in the game? You know,
Red must have been watching some Charles P. Tillman film. There's
no doubt. There's no doubt. Yeah, we try to educate over here. You know, the history of the game.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you can learn all that and more. Joe, I got a kind of not football related question. I pulled some people at Miami, and they were all curious. Had to know, what was your late night food spot? You had some late nights.
Yeah, I think you got a plethora of options in that small town there. Okay, so I was a big Skipper's guy, man. I liked the Cajun chicken sandwich a ton. Now, they're not always open as late as you want them to be, so you have to adapt on the fly at times. You know, any young freshman in there is going to go through their bagel and deli experience and try the crunch and munch. You know, that wears off after a while. The line's a little too long. So, you know, when in doubt, when you're in a bind, you got to rock with the Bruno's Pizza. You know, I mean, I think it's a simple formula. You got to have contingency plans, because you just don't know what High Street's going to look like at those hours of the night, you know.
It's fair.
I never became a Skyline chili guy, though. I just never was one. No. I can't get down with that after growing up around Yesterdog. I never became a fan of Skyline chili.
From me, going to school at Dayton, that was all the buzz, all the Cincinnati folk raving about it. It's that and the Bengals. That's all they talk about. neither were good this year for me.
That's true.
Coach, look at that. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Coach, I just had one question about, so you were at Miami to go into school and coaching, and now you're at Buffalo. So what is so unique about the MAC as a conference that you've just learned from having a lot of experience in it?
Yeah, well, I think number one, you get a bunch of kids who love football and you know, play really hard. And I think that's the calling card of the league. Like there's really good coaches. Because there's a lot of parity in the conference, and there hasn't been a repeat winner in I don't even know how long. It's been a long time, you know, since a repeat winner took place, 7 or 8 years, I think. Don't hold me to that, but it's been a long time. So there's a lot of parity. There's a lot of tough, hard-nosed, you know, kids who love football and want to get great degrees. We get to play on television and in those midweek action games, and every game is available on TV. I certainly think even with NIU exiting the conference, it's arguably the most stable conference out there in the exodus and movement that we've undergone. And, you know, when I watch these other group of five conferences, I would argue top to bottom, we have an incredibly deep league, you know, and, you know, there's on any given year, 5 to 7 teams that have a chance to compete for it. And it's always a race through November. And that to me, and we're all in close proximity, which makes it even cooler and more unique. A lot of these kids know each other, and that I think makes it, these coaches know each other. That makes it all the more fun, because that when there's a lot of parity in your talent level, then coaching does come into play a lot more, right? And the development piece, because you get to recruit a lot of kids who are not finished products, who are going to develop, and, you know, you can actually help them become, you know, the best version of themselves every day. So there's a lot of good football players, that every school has good players, and you know, it's just a fun league to be a part of. You know, we get great bowl games. We have tremendous people in the conference, to be honest with you. Like, it's a hard league. You know, it is competitive.
Yeah, Coach, I had one more, and I did want to say I was devastated about the Northern news. Honestly, had not heard anything about it, but I was a Mac baby. I'm not too sure I wasn't conceived on a Maction Tuesday night. Both my parents went to Northern. So I'm very sad to see him leave, because I think that's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it, but kind of the changes at the top of that conference, they happen quick, and you see teams get a lot better fast and compete year over year. I mean, you guys, great example. You went from 3 wins to 9 wins. And now you got, and like you said, you're keeping your guys, you're retaining a lot of talent. So, you know, the sky's the limit for the next year, but that'll be my last question. You know, you step in a tough year for Buffalo last year. You have a great year this year, end with a big win over Liberty. And so what is that? What are kind of your goals, or what are you looking to accomplish after, you know, what a lot would say is a lot already just in year one? What does year two look like to be a success at Buffalo?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously you shouldn't get into this if you aren't trying to compete for a championship, in my opinion. And everyone, you know, yeah, I'm big on the process and the everyday that leads to it. And we got to do the things necessary every day to get that done. But, you know, I'm a competitive guy and I want competitive people around us, and we want to win. We want to win a championship. So that to me is what does that take every single day to be the best version of the 2025, you know, team that we can be, because past success has nothing to do, is not an indicator of future success at all. Right. And you have every team has its own entity. Every team is its own, you know, own story. Right. So what story is this team going to write? You know, I don't know. Like, the thing that I'm probably most proud of was that Buffalo hadn't won a game in November in 3 years. And, you know, we went 4-0 in November and won our bowl game. So won our last five games. So I think there is a belief we got better as the year went on. And certainly had to face some roadblocks there at points in the season. And we fought through those and stayed the course, but it's a whole new team. And now when you have success a little bit, like now there certainly becomes more expectations, right? So expectations are, you know, in my opinion, just limitations you set on yourself. So like, let's just go try and be the best version we can be every day and be competitive. And the reason we won some close games, in my opinion, has a lot to do with the chemistry and the culture that our head coach instilled in the team, and making it about the team and not about individuals. And that's a hard, that takes time to build it that way and make people care about it, that stuff, and teach them the why of that, because, you know, you have some success now, people want to get theirs, right? So you have to, there's going to be certain unique challenges that present itself this season that, you know, you have to be proactive about and make sure that, you know, everyone is pointed towards the common cause of the team and of winning. And if you make winning the priority in the process of being the best version of yourself every day and the best player you can be and the best leader you can be, then you're going to get the results you want, you know, over time. Right. So, you know, just try to be the same, be consistent. That's the hardest thing in life to do. Like, if you go to the gym every day, Chuck, at 6 a.m., it's hard to wake up tomorrow and do it. Right. It's really hard to be consistent. You know, for a grown man, it's no different than an 18-year-old. So, you know, we have to be the example. We got to be consistent, and, you know, we have to coach them hard like we always do. Like, I'm not going to change. I know that. I mean, coach our best players hard every day, hold them accountable, even when they get frustrated. You know, like, I shouldn't be their best friend every day. You know, that's you know, they're going to know we care about them. They're going to know we love them, but you know, you shouldn't come to Buffalo if you don't want to be coached hard and held to a high standard, because, like, you owe it to them to give them that, right? So
standard is the standard.
That's right, man.
Well, right. Coach, thank you, but I feel we'd be derelict in our duties as college football podcasters if we did not get a national championship prediction from you. And do not be afraid of breaking the Irish hearts on here. They've heard it all before. Trust me.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an interesting one for me, because obviously, you know, I have not done my due diligence to know, like, how banged up is Notre Dame's O-line, because obviously they got super banged up in the last couple games, and that's going to play a factor.
They're banged up, Coach.
Say it again?
They're banged up, Coach.
Yeah. So that is concerning, and that's going to be a key determinant for me. You know, I think that everyone wants to talk about how is Notre Dame going to play man coverage, and like, Notre Dame's going to do what they do. And let me tell you, they get sticky in the back end. So they are elite in coverage, and they play man versus some formations and splits that I hate playing man to. They condensed formations, and they can get picked, and they fight through all that shit. And it's impressive. I mean, they tailpipe and they finish plays on the football. You know, I certainly think that, you know, it just troubles me that everybody I talk to seems to be riding Ohio State, you know, everybody I talk to. So I'm going to rock with the Irish. just because, you know, I feel like nobody is. And I think that they're certainly going to have to step it up up front and find a way to run the football. And that's going to be a challenge. That is going to be an absolute challenge. So I just hope it's a great game. It's two-story programs, and they both have very unique stories this season. That's what makes college football so great. But it's going to be, and they both had very interesting roads to get there, man. And, you know, Ohio State finding ways to win games, even, you know, in different ways. They both won games in different ways. Right. So it's going to be a heavyweight clash. And I know Ohio State's been very, very elite in the first quarter. So Notre Dame's got to weather that storm and find a way to stay in the game early. And if it's a game in the second half of a national championship, then, you know, that's a coin flip. So.
Yeah, I think we just need to pull a couple Thomas Hammock tricks out of our sleeve and we'll do it. But
I've watched about every playoff game, and I tell you what, that wide delay throwback is open in every game. So I would be remiss without saying you will probably see the Y high play. You know, the quarterback roll out one direction, throw it back to the tight end, because that play is just open, and it's usually right across the 50-yard line. In what I call the alumni zone, you know, first and 10, because when I call all of you someday and try to get you to become boosters and donors, okay, you're gonna buy season tickets on the 50-yard line, you know, in a press box maybe, and that's the alumni zone. So all these offensive coordinators try to get cute right when they get a first down near the 50-yard line, and that's when the trick plays happen, and that play is just always open. So they should definitely run that.
Yeah, that's the only way Georgia scored against us. That was the exact play. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
But, Coach, seriously, like, know you're, you know, an incredibly busy guy. Really appreciate you, you know, taking the time. And this was great. Learned a lot about kind of the philosophy and, you know, what it takes. And I know, you know, you have a tough job, but what makes it great is you love it. And you love those guys you're coached. So it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us. We do appreciate it. You're our number two guest. You have a long way to go to catch recurring guest Joey Ellis. So I'm hoping we can get you back on sometime soon. But it was always great talking with you. Thanks for sharing your insight and really appreciate it, Coach.
No, I appreciate you guys, man. Big fans of the pod. Big fans of you guys doing something you enjoy. You found something you guys love and you're passionate about and you get to talk about it. So, you know, keep chasing that and keep creating content, because I think that it is a unique way to express your personality and the way that you guys do and about something you're passionate about that you know, certainly beats your day job. So keep it going. And I appreciate you having me on. This is fun and shoot, you know, I'm always down to talk a little ball. So hit me up.
Anytime.
I will continue to be a big supporter of what you guys are doing.
All right.
Thanks again, Coach.
Thanks, all right, Coach. Man.
See you guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Samples, Kirk Cousins had a good year.
Quavo gets cooking.